When our generation has passed away, when the tongues of praise speaking have turned to a cold, dumb dust, it will be written that John F. Kennedy walked with the American people in their vast diversity and gave them all he had toward their moving on into new phases of their great human adventure.
I am announcing today my candidacy for the presidency of the United States. The presidency is the most powerful office in the free world. Through its leadership can come a more vital life for all of our people. In it are centered the hopes of the globe around us for freedom and a more secure life. For it is in the executive branch that the most crucial decisions of this century must be made in the next 4 years. For 18 years, I have been in the service of the United States. For 4 years as a naval officer, and for the last 14 years as a member of the Congress. In the last 20 years, I have traveled to nearly every country and every continent, from Leningrad to Saigon, from Bucharest to Lima. From all of this, I have developed an image of America as fulfilling a noble and historic role as the defender of freedom in a time of maximum peril, and of the American people as confident, courageous, and persevering. It is with this image that I begin this campaign.
And I want to be sure that we haven't lost something important in this country, that we haven't gone soft, that we don't have so many cars and ice boxes and television sets, that we just look to our own private interests and not the welfare of the country. We who sit here today are the beneficiaries of the millions of Americans who have fought and died and lived for this country to make it what it is. I will describe to you only one of them, a young American who was taken prisoner in the Korean War, was brought out in front of his comrades, and he was asked by his Chinese captors what he thought of General George C. Marshall. General George C. Marshall, he said, is a great American. Immediately he was hit by the butt of a rifle and picked himself up, and they asked him the same question. What do you think of George C. Marshall? He said, I think General George C. Marshall is a great American. This time there was no rifle butt. They had classified him and found that he had courage. And the question is, where are all of us as Americans and as a nation going to be when we are asked to step out and say what we stand for?
We need the best educated citizens in the world. The schools in your own state may be good and the teachers may be well compensated. And they may be in my own state of Massachusetts. But we are our brother's keeper. This is not 50 separate states. This is a national problem to make sure that whatever talent and ability any young man or woman may have, that they have a chance to develop it in good schools with competent and well-compensated teachers. I am sure that here in this state of West Virginia, that no one believes that I'd be a candidate for the presidency if I didn't think I could meet my oath of office. The day I was born, it was said I could never run for president because I wouldn't meet my oath of office. I came to the state of West Virginia, which has fewer numbers of my co-religionists than any state in the Union. I would not have come here if I didn't feel that I was going to get complete opportunity to run for office as a fellow American in this state. I would not run for it if in any way I didn't feel that I could do the job. So I come here today saying that I think that this is an issue with government.
Last night I was in McDowell County. That county produces more coal than any county in the world. There are more people on relief in that county than in any county in the country. Now, why should there be 250,000 people living on a subsistence and below subsistence distribution from the federal government who only want to work, 100,000 able-bodied men who want a job and can't find it, who have spent their lives in the coal mines, who have spent their lives underground working in 35 or 40 inches, and who want to get a job again, who want to work? That is the problem of West Virginia. And I hope the people of this country regard carefully what's happened here, because the problem that West Virginia is facing is the problem that all America is going to face. That is the problem of what happens to men when machines take their place. We produce more coal than we did 20 years ago in West Virginia, but there are thousands of men who mined in 1940 who can't find a job. What is happening in the coal industry in the last 10 years in West Virginia is going to spread all over the country. When a machine takes the job of 10 men, where do those 10 men go? What happens to their families? They live on unemployment compensation, and that runs out. They live on a subsistence diet distributed by the federal government, which is beyond the living standard for any American. And then they wait for a chance and a job. I did not undertake lightly to seek the presidency. It is not a prize or a normal object of ambition. It is the greatest office in the world.
West Virginia, 25 votes.
Mr. Chairman, West Virginia proudly casts her votes as follows. Symington, 1 1/2 votes. Stevenson, 3 votes. Johnson, 5 1/2 votes. Kennedy, 15 votes.
Wisconsin.
Mr. Chairman, Wisconsin cast 23 votes for Senator Kennedy. 8 votes for Senator Humphrey.
Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman, Wyoming's vote will make a majority for Senator Kennedy.
Mr. Chairman, I should like to move that the vote be made unanimous for that great American, Senator Kennedy of Massachusetts, the next president of the United States.
The motion is that the rules be suspended and that John F. Kennedy be nominated for President of the United States by acclamation.
Let me say first that I accept the nomination of the Democratic Party. I accept it without reservation and with only one obligation. The obligation to devote every effort of my mind and spirit to lead our party back to victory and our nation to greatness. I stand here tonight facing west on what was once the last frontier. From the lands that stretch 3,000 miles behind us, the pioneers gave up their safety, their comfort, and sometimes their lives to build our new west. They were not the captives of their own doubts, nor the prisoners of their own price tags. They were determined to make the new world strong and free, an example to the world, to overcome its hazards and its hardships, to conquer the enemies that threatened from within and out. Some would say that those struggles are all over, that all the horizons have been explored, that all the battles have been won, that there is no longer an American frontier. But I trust that no one in this assemblage would agree with that sentiment. For the problems are not all solved, and the battles are not all won. And we stand today on the edge of a new frontier, the frontier of the 1960s, the frontier of unknown opportunities and perils, the frontier of unfilled hopes and unfilled threats. Woodrow Wilson's new freedom promised our nation a new political and economic framework. Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal promised security and succor to those in need. But the new frontier of which I speak
is not a set of promises. It is a set of challenges. It sums up not what I intend to offer to the American people, but what I intend to ask of them. It appeals to their pride. It appeals to our pride, not our security. It holds out the promise of more sacrifice instead of more security. The new frontier is here, whether we seek it or not. Beyond that frontier are uncharted areas of science and space, unsolved problems of peace and war, unconquered province of ignorance and prejudice, unanswered questions of poverty and surplus. It would be easier to shrink from that new frontier, to look to the safe mediocrity of the past, to be lulled by good intentions and high rhetoric, and those who prefer that course should not vote for me or the Democratic Party. But I believe that the times require imagination and courage and perseverance. I'm asking each of you to be pioneers towards that new frontier. My call is to the young in heart, regardless of age, to the stout in spirit, regardless of party, to all who respond to the scriptural call, be strong and of good courage, be not afraid, neither be dismayed. For courage, not complacency, is our need today. Leadership, not salesmanship. There may be those who wish to hear more promises to this group or that, more harsh rhetoric about the men in the Kremlin as a substitute for policy, more assurances of a golden future where taxes are always low and the subsidies are always high. But my promises are in the platform that you have adopted. Our ends will not be won by rhetoric, and we can have faith in the future only if we have faith in ourselves. For the harsh facts of the matter are that we stand at this frontier at a turning point of history. We must prove all over again to a watching world, as we sit on a most conspicuous stage, whether this nation, conceived as it is, can, with its freedom of choice, its breadth of opportunity, its range of alternatives, can compete with the single-minded advance of the communist system. Can a nation organized and governed such as ours endure? That is the real question. Have we the nerve and the will? Can we carry through in an age where we will witness not only new breakthroughs in weapons of destruction, but also a race for mastery of the sky and the rain, the ocean and the tides, the far side of space, and the inside of men's minds? That is the question of the new frontier. That is the choice that our nation must make, a choice that lies not merely between two men or two parties, but between the public interest and private comfort, between national greatness and national decline, between the fresh air of progress and the stale, dank atmosphere of normalcy, between dedication or mediocrity. All mankind waits upon our decision. A whole world looks to see what we shall do, and we cannot fail that trust, and we cannot fail to try. It has been a long road, from the first snowy day in New Hampshire many months ago to this crowded convention city. Now begins another long journey, taking me into your cities and homes across the United States. Give me your help and your hand and your voice.
Contrary to common newspaper usage, I am not the Catholic candidate for president. I am the Democratic Party's candidate for president, who happens also to be a Catholic. I do not speak for my church on public matters, and the church does not speak for me. Whatever issue may come before me as president, if I should be elected, on birth control, divorce, censorship, gambling, or any other subject, I will make my decision in accordance with these views, in accordance with what my conscience tells me to be in the national interest, and without regard to outside religious pressure or dictates. And no power or threat of punishment could cause me to decide otherwise. But if the time should ever come, and I do not concede any conflict to be remotely possible, when my office would require me to either violate my conscience or violate the national interest, then I would resign the office. And I hope any other conscientious public servant would do likewise. But I do not intend to apologize for these views to my critics of either Catholic or Protestant faith. Nor do I intend to disavow either my views or my church in order to win this election. If I should lose on the real issues, I shall return to my seat in the Senate, satisfied that I tried my best and was fairly judged. But if this election is decided on the basis that 40 million Americans lost their chance of being president on the day they were baptized, then it is the whole nation that will be the loser in the eyes of Catholics and non-Catholics around the world, in the eyes of history, and in the eyes of our own people.
America's prestige abroad will be just as high as the spokesmen for America allow it to be. Now, when we have a presidential candidate, for example, Senator Kennedy, stating over and over again that the United States is second in space, and the fact of the matter is that the space score today is 28-8. We've had 28 successful shots, they've had 8. When he states that we're second in education, and I have seen Soviet education, and I've seen ours, and we're not, that we're second in science, because they may be ahead in one area or another, when overall we're way ahead of the Soviet Union and all other countries in science. When he says, as he did in January of this year, that we have the worst slums, that we have the most crowded schools, when he says that 17 million people go to bed hungry every night, when he makes statements like this, what does this do to American prestige?
What I downgrade, Mr. Nixon, is the leadership the country's getting, not the country. Now, I didn't make most of the statements that you said I made. I believe the Soviet Union is first in outer space. We may have made more shots, but the size of their rocket thrust and all the rest. You yourself said to Khrushchev, you may be ahead of us in rocket thrust, but we're ahead of you in color television.
What will determine whether Senator Kennedy or I, if I am elected, was a great president? It will not be our ambition that will determine it, because greatness is not something that is written on a campaign poster. The next president, as he leads America in the free world, can be only as great as the American people are great. And so I say in conclusion, keep America's faith strong. See that the young people of America particularly have faith in the ideals of freedom and faith in God, which distinguishes us from the atheistic materialists who oppose us.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Many who are listening in the eastern part of the United States will find that it is now about 3:15 in the morning. While there are still some results still to come in, if the present trend continues, if Mr. Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, will be the next president of the United States. And I want to say that one of the great features of America is that we have political contests, that they are very hard fought, as this one is hard fought. And once the decision is made, we unite behind the man who is elected. I want Senator Kennedy to know, and I want all of you to know, that certainly, if this trend does continue and he does become our next president, that he will have my wholehearted support and yours too.
The election may have been a close one, but I think that there is general agreement by all of our citizens that a supreme national effort will be needed in the years ahead to move this country safely through the 1960s. I ask your help in this effort, and I can assure you that every degree of mind and spirit that I possess will be devoted to the long-range interests of the United States and to the cause of freedom around the world. So now my wife and I prepare for a new administration and for a new baby. Thank you.
Today to inaugurate the 35th president of this Union of Free People. It is my high honor to begin this event by presenting the United States Marine Band, which will play a song we all cherish, America the Beautiful.
Artists to participate in the august occasions of the state seems something for us all to celebrate. And today is for my cause a day of days, and his be poetry's old-fashioned praise, who was the first to think of such a thing. This tribute to be his that here I bring is about the new order of the ages. I can't see in this light. Is about the new order of the ages that God, that in their Latin, our founding sages, God gave us his approval of. Let me have it. This was to be a preface to the poem I can say to you without seeing it. The poem goes like this. The land was ours before we were the lands. She was our land more than 100 years before we were her people. She was ours in Massachusetts and Virginia, but we were England's, still colonial. Possessing what we still were unpossessed by what we now no more possessed. Something we were withholding made us weak until we found out that it was ourselves we were withholding from our land of living and forthwith found salvation in surrender. Such as we were, we gave ourselves outright. The deed of gift was many deeds of war. To the land vaguely realizing westward, but still unstoried, artless, unenhanced, such as she was, such as she would become, has become, and for this occasion, let me change that to what she will become. And this poem, what I was leading up to was a dedication of the poem the president-elect.
You, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, do solemnly swear.
I, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, do solemnly swear.
That you will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of your ability,
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.